Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of Quite a Good Sport. My name is Anna Shinsky. I'm here with this chap, James Harkin. Hi, James.
Hi, Anna. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Still reeling from our various sporting contests over the last few weeks. But today we're going to be talking about archery. Know anything about archery?
Well, I know that it's important in history. Lots of archers in various Hundred Years' Wars and things like that.
In all the Hundred Years' Wars, in the hundreds of Hundred Years' Wars there have been, it's been crucial. But, I mean, I hope it's not an awkward subject to bring up now that the Olympics is in France. But of course, archery is the reason that we dominated France in one single battle at the Battle of Agincourt, wasn't it?
Yes. Thank God there wasn't a war where you had to be a really good swimmer, for instance, or a really good football team or anything like that.
Yes. So hard to imagine what those wars would be. I like the idea of a war all fought entirely from the ocean, swimming.
I know also that you have to go down the butts.
Yes. What is the butt? The butt's the target?
I think the butts are the archery field. And the butt used to be the name for the target itself. And so in Othello, Shakespeare writes, "Here is my journey's end. Here is my butt." And he is, of course, referring to himself as if he's an arrow taking a journey to the bullseye of the target.
Of course, but also, of course, knowing Shakespeare as we do and his filthy sense of humour, he probably also was referring to the arse, wasn't he?
He probably was.
He usually was. Anyway, I think what we discovered recently is that archery has changed quite a lot since the days of Agincourt and the days of Shakespeare. Because we had a go at it.
We did indeed. And I think, why don't we go straight into it today and listen to us learning how to arch. We went down to Archery Fit in Greenwich. And what you will hear is us being taught the basics by our brilliant trainer, Ollie. So let's hear us getting down to business at the butts. So, Anna, we are here in Greenwich at Archery Fit. Are you feeling archery fit this morning?
I've never felt more archery fit in my life, James, having never arched, ever. And same for you, I think. We're both complete beginners to it.
Absolutely. Never arched, but really keen to learn how to do it and whether we actually will be able to hit the target at all.
Yeah, I think as long as everyone leaves alive, I'm happy. Let's go, shall we?
Let's go. So we're walking from our arrow depository into a big room. It's like almost like a sports hall. And at the far end of the room, there are four targets with yellow in the middle, red, blue, black in circles.
And we're surrounded by World of Warcraft cardboard cutouts and posters. And I don't know World of Warcraft. Is archery a part of it?
Archery's always played a bit of a part in fantasy and history alike. Don't get me started on that, otherwise you guys are not going to have an archery class.
Right, okay.
No, do me a favour, take your arrows, put them inside of the arrow tube, tip down towards the ground, finger tabs and arm guards on the side of your arrow tubes. Okay, now come over and I'll give you guys your bows. We've gone ahead and named all of them after superheroes. So, James, you're going to be taking Fury with you today.
Fury.
And is that Anna. One of the gladiators?
So, Marvel and then Ellie, you'll be taking Falcon.
I think that actually was one of the gladiators.
Yeah.
Now, when we're shooting, there are three basic steps to every single shot. Later on, we'll expand that number a little bit further, but there are three basic steps that make up every single shot. Your left hand will rest into the grip of the bow while you put your index finger, middle finger, and ring finger from your right hand underneath the green locking point of the bowstring. And now from here, all you're going to do is start by pushing the bow down towards the ground at a 45 degree angle. You'll notice here that I'm not going ahead and pulling all the way back on that bowstring. I'm just pulling back enough so my fingers stay in line with my elbow here. Once I've done that, make sure my shoulders are level and then look at the target. This will be your first key step. Your second step will be bringing the bow up. And once you bring the bow up, you're going to focus on your left arm. Reach as far forwards towards the target as you can. Then your second step will be complete and you can move on to the third step, which is called your anchor position for a reason. You're going to pull all the way back using your right elbow and your right shoulder blade until your index finger touches the corner of your mouth. And that's it. Once you get there, you simply release your fingers from the bowstring and the arrow will be delivered to the target.
It's quite a force that you pull back with, isn't it? And yeah. I do feel like my large nose is going to get in the way of the bow when I
release it. We'll be perfectly fine. As long as, basically, we're rotating our head to the side there, we'll be perfectly fine there. And funny thing, these fellas, they're 16 pounds right now. The ones that the Olympic archers use, well, typically speaking, are looking at over 40 to 50 pounds.
Wow. Or so.
Now, to aim, you don't have any fancy sights today, so close your left eye up. Excellent. Now, with your left eye closed, put the tip of the arrow in the middle, and now pull back a little bit further, index finger right to the corner. Excellent. Let go when you're ready.
Right in the middle.
Now, do not worry where they're going right now. Your goal right now is to get a really clean grouping.
You got it.
It hit the board. It went in the blue circle, which is the third circle out, which is pretty damn good for starters.
So
5 out of 10.
Well, okay, 4 out of 10, Anna. First arrow will load for you. Everything after, it's up to you.
Okay.
Keep your pinky finger nice and relaxed. And now you're going to roll your elbow clear of the bowstring. Excellent.
Oh, gosh.
That little elbow roll is going to help keep your arm engaged. Now, chin up, look at the target. Close your left eye.
God, it's surprisingly hard to keep your elbow rolled this way.
This will always be the most alien feeling.
Oh, dear.
Now, pull back with your elbow. Pull with your right elbow. Pull, 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 pull. Touch your next finger right to the corner of your mouth. Get your elbow a little bit higher up. Good. Put the tip of the arrow in the dead center of the target. And when you're ready, send it. Well done.
Wow.
Excellent.
So Anna has hit the red circle with her first go. But the good thing is we're not scoring and it's not important where you hit right now. But it is quite annoying.
We can retrospectively score. We have to keep reminding ourselves that we are, how many metres away are we shooting from?
So right now we're starting on 6 metres.
6 metres away, and in the Olympics they shoot from?
They might just be shooting on 70 metres.
70 metres, okay.
Now, we can challenge ourselves a little bit. Both of you, pick up your arrow tubes, bring them back to the white line. So welcome to long distance, guys. We've added 6 more meters. When you're ready.
Elbow up.
3, 2, 1. Lovely. That's fine.
Thank I missed the entire board.
That's fine. 3, 2, 1. Stand up.
Bloody hell. Done.
Oh, you at least hit it, Anna. Release,
yeah? A little fun round before we go into a proper competition end. Gonna go for a balloon round.
Excellent.
Okay, so Ollie has put some balloons on the middle of the targets, which, to be honest, from what we've done already, won't be particularly in danger, but we're going to try and pop them.
The balloons are feeling no fear whatsoever.
Well, time to prove them wrong. Now, by the end of today, our goal is for there to be 0 balloons up there now. Give you guys a little bit more incentive to hit the centre. 3, 2, 1, send it. Close.
I felt like I was doing everything right, but I was a long way on the top right. Let's try again.
I want you to try and basically stand upright. Stand upright. Good. Now, from here, just turn your head to the top. Well done. Rotate your head towards the target. No pressure. There's a little bit of pressure.
I was so disappointed.
Left arm up. 3, 2, 1. Oh. Really nice and relaxed release there, man. That was probably your best release. Well done. Start the bow down.
You've managed to get 2 arrows fantastic. Right on either side of the balloon. A balloon sandwich.
Well done. Come on up.
Anna, that was amazing. I wasn't watching because I was concentrating on myself, but I heard the bang.
Yeah. Well done. Excellent.
So archery's been a feature of the Olympics since the early days. But in 1900, it looked really different. It was something called sur la perche à la herse. And this was in Paris as well, the 1900 Olympics.
What do those words mean?
Good question. I believe they mean on the pole with a bow.
Oh.
Is it herse a bow?
Herse, I thought it might have been going back to the butts again, but no.
It's H-E-R-S-E. It looks like horse misspelled.
Ah.
I think it's on the pole with an arrow.
Okay.
So it involved putting a target on a 28-metre high pole, which is very high, and you had to hit that.
Oh, wow. So you're aiming kind of upwards, but that does feel... I mean, it's quite dangerous, we learned, archery, if you do it wrong, but you get taught to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as no one's stood behind the target, you should be okay. But if you're firing it directly into the air, that feels like... Oh, it just feels ripe for mishap.
I don't know if health and safety was as rigorous in 1900 in Paris, but it does seem quite fun. The frustrating thing is we know hardly anything else about it. We just have the names of 3 people, the gold, silver and bronze medal winners. I think 2 were Belgian, and that's it. But it was a big deal, end of the 19th century, turn of the 20th century.
My favourite archer of the 20th century was Doug Easton. So he originally was a shooter. And then one day he leant on his gun and it went off in his legs. And luckily he saved any serious injury, but he decided that shooting probably wasn't for him and he decided to go into bows and arrows instead. And not only did he compete in archery, but he also started making archery equipment. And his company, Easton, has been responsible for almost all the advances in archery over the last 100 years. But more importantly than that, he came up with the idea of using carbon fiber in archery bows. And when they started using it in archery bows, all the other sports got involved. So golf clubs, bike frames, hockey sticks, tennis rackets, they all decided to use carbon fiber because they'd used it in archery first. And that, I think, is a real reason that archery is a very important sport in the history of sport itself.
Yeah, that's amazing. You always know with any equipment, any sporting equipment, when it says carbon fiber, I still have no idea what that means to this day, but I know it means this is pretty good stuff. Yeah, carbon fiber ping pong bat. Yeah, that's what you want. Yeah. I like that it was quite popular among women, actually, in the late 19th, early 20th century. And there was one woman who was one of those athletes who was just absolutely dominant. She was called Alice Lee. And archery championships, world championships, as I think they were called, were quite a big thing from about the 1880s. But basically only Brits competed. So between 1881 and 1922, she won every single championship, world championship, except when the First World War messed things up for so many people, but for her archery record. And I think one year when her mum competed as well and beat her into second place.
That is awkward.
It's a bit of a dick move from a mother, isn't it?
It is. It's like, oh, I see you're winning all the archery championships, dear. Well, maybe I need to come in and teach you a thing or two.
Yeah. Perhaps it's a usefully humbling lesson for life that every mother should teach their children, not to get too big for their boots.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to my mum coming into the podcasting ring.
Having met your mum, I would subscribe to any podcast that she released, so I would urge her to go for it, please. Other good archers in existence are current archer Matt Stutzman. Do you remember him?
Oh, is he the one who does it with his feet?
He's the one who does it with his feet. Yes.
That's so
but
cool.
He also has a world record for any archer for the furthest target hit accurately. So I think in 2015, he hit a target 310 yards away. And he was born without arms. And he did a Google in about 2011, I think, saying how to shoot a bow and arrow without arms because he fancied doing it. Didn't get any Google results, so just tried it himself. And now he's amazing. He got a silver medal at the Paralympics about a year after he started, I think. And yeah, he's incredible.
That is amazing.
Longest accurate shot.
There was a guy called Howard Hill, who is sometimes called the greatest archer in history. And he would always do trick shots. So the classic thing with archery is you put an apple on someone's head and then you shoot it off, right? That is the old William Tell shot.
Yeah.
But he decided that he was going to do it with a prune instead. So he would put a prune on someone's head and shoot it off with an arrow.
That's good because you're going to be pooing yourself by that point anyway as a person with a prune on your head. So you don't need to eat that prune afterwards. The job's already done.
It's a quicker laxative than just eating prunes, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry, mate. Don't need to eat it. Doesn't matter if I hit it. You've already shat yourself.
Horace A. Ford was another one. He won the British Championships in 1849. Mm-hmm. He's often called the best British archer who ever lived. But his trick was he was the first person to pull the string back always to a very specific part of your face. So do you remember Ollie told us to always bring it so our index finger was touching our mouth?
I do.
He was the first person to kind of do this, and it meant that he was just way more accurate than everyone else. Everyone else was just pulling it and see what happened, but he suddenly,
wow,
you know, was absolutely smashing it. And then everyone copied him, of course.
God, some things like that make me think people were just idiots. Perhaps it wasn't as obvious as it seems that you should always pull it back to the same place.
Yeah.
But well done him. That actually annoyed me a little bit on the day because something I didn't mention to Ollie was that I'd just got a spot, a lovely little whitehead on the corner of my mouth, exactly where he kept on telling us to put our index finger. So by the end of our archery session, it was really aggravated.
You know what, though? I wonder if everything we got taught on that day was just bullshit, because over the weekend, I went to Bristol and I went to a fun fair and tried to win a cuddly toy for my daughter in an archery range and was thoroughly unsuccessful.
Well, it's a very different discipline, isn't it? Fun fair arching. It's a more noble art, in fact, but much harder to master. So don't feel bad, James. And did your daughter take it well? Did she understand? Or Did she scream and cry with shame?
She understood when I explained to her that normally I was 18 metres away and this time they only put me 3 metres away, and it just kind of put me off a little bit. She completely understood.
Yeah, it's one of those things, aren't you? The closer you are, the harder it is, in fact, to the target. Well, we should get on to our next little segment, but can I just tell you one thing that amused me about archery before we do?
Yes, please do.
I don't know if the name Erica Eiffel is familiar to you, James, or to listeners at home.
Oh.
She was in the news a few years ago.
I know where we're going. Was she the woman who married the Eiffel Tower?
She was the woman who in 2007, after a 3-year committed relationship, married the Eiffel Tower. But she was also an archer, professional archer. And in fact, the year before her marriage to the Eiffel Tower, she came, I think, 9th in the Archery World Cup.
Wow.
And she was great. She very sadly, I believe, lost her archery sponsors when she admitted to being in a relationship with her beau, which I don't think should disqualify you.
It must be very difficult for her to watch the Olympics at the moment, because not only is she watching the archery, which she hasn't qualified for, but her ex is right in the middle of all the shots.
Yeah. I don't think she was in love with every bow. I think it was just hers. I don't think she sees a bow and she's like, oh, I'm in love with that one too. But I don't know.
I met the Eiffel Tower because it's in Paris.
Oh my God. Oh, that's a shame, James. That's when you try to say something clever around me, it's always going to backfire on you.
But you know why? You know why I got that wrong? The reason I got that wrong is because when you said her bow, mm-hmm. I didn't realize you were talking about her archery bow. I thought you were talking about B-E-A-U, as in
wow.
Her lover.
This has been an absolute comedy of errors. And of course, it is set in France, so it would make a lot of sense that I use that French word for her lover. Well, I hope everyone's enjoyed the mass of confusion there into which I think we tried to weave a couple of jokes and failed spectacularly. But I think the lesson of Erica Eiffel is that archery, really, it takes all sorts. And in fact, it seems like it could be quite an excluding sport. You know, you can't just go and pick up an archery bow and go arching with your mates. Or can you? And what we found is that actually anyone can take it up, and there are places to arch all around the country. And we spoke to someone who manages a brilliant archery place in Birmingham. She's called Jamila B, and it was really great to discover what an open and welcoming sport it is. So here's our interview now. So I am sitting here with Jamila B. Hello, Jamila.
Hi, Anna.
Thank you so much for joining me. Jamila is an excellent archer. She is founder of Crescent Archery in Birmingham, and she is, I believe, legacy coordinator for archery at the Olympics. Is that right?
I am, yes. So the legacy coordinator for Archery GB.
Excellent. So what does this mean? How are you coordinating a legacy?
So I've always had a deep connection to archery. So it's always been a passion of mine. And my sort of mission, it's to empower more women into archery and make the sport accessible to anybody who wants to have a go.
So it's very interesting that you say you have a deep connection to archery. What is it that you love about archery, and how did you get into it?
From a very young age, I remember always having this connection to the sport. It's very rich in the Islamic religion. So in Islam, it's considered as a sunnah sport. So it's one of the very few sports that are highly encouraged to pursue because of the many benefits that sport brings. Now, at that age, I wasn't aware of the many benefits it brings. It just looked cool, but it wasn't accessible at the time. It wasn't offered in schools for certainly me then. So it was always a sport that was at the back of my mind, that this is something that I do want to try and I want to pursue it.
That's really fascinating. So I'm sort of immediately going to sidetrack us, because I'm interested in what it is about archery and Islam that makes it so valued. I suppose a lot of sports spring from a need to hunt and a desire to go to war among humans. Two things we love doing, hunting and war. And so an archery obviously can be used for both of those things. Is it anything to do with those things, or is it thought of as a good thing for different reasons?
No, it is. It partly was in them days, it was used for hunting, for wars and battles. It was also mentioned of the very many benefits. So the mental well-being, the physical well-being that archery brings. And we all know that archery is a very inclusive sport. all abilities, all ages can take part. I've had on the shooting line, I've had three generations from granddaughter to mother to granddaughter take part, which is absolutely amazing. And you don't need a certain fitness level to take part in archery. You don't need to wear a certain attire like you do in other sports. So archery is a very unique and special sport.
Okay, so if I want to receive these benefits, I'm going to turn up at Crescent Archery, and I've got in my head an idea of Robin Hood galloping through the woods, and sort of he's just got a bow and arrow, and he pings an arrow through the air. Now, having seen a bit of archery at the Olympics, it's not quite the same as that, as far as I can tell. But can you just describe quickly what's the setup like?
You know, it depends on the archery club that you go to. So starting off, you'd probably start off at 10 meters, and then over time, depending on, you know, what distance you're shooting at and the discipline that you're shooting at, it would increase.
And do you have to have strength to be pulling it back, or is it almost automated? It doesn't require too much.
No, there's different types of equipment. So again, you know, it is for all abilities. So we start off with a low poundage bow, and then you work your way up.
I mean, another thing is, do archers ever store their arrows in a nice quiver on their back, or is that not a feasible thing in archery in this day and age?
We recommend that you have a hip quiver.
Okay.
You know, if you can get a nice quiver, and there are some very fancy quivers out there, then by all means. But the club that you will start off at will provide you all the basic equipment that you need.
Yes, you don't want to turn up on your first day with a really fancy quiver.
No.
Having never touched a bow, I imagine. Like someone who brings their pool cue to a pub.
I have had an experience where I got an email from a lovely gentleman, and he said that he's been gifted a bow from a friend who no longer shoots, and is he able to bring that bow with him to his first session? But when he came to the club, he's never done archery before, he showed me the bow that he was gifted, and it was a very, very high poundage bow. He couldn't even pull it back, and I just said, no, just put that back. And we'll start off at the training bows.
That's quite a high-pressure gift to give someone. I'm not sure about that. Giving them a gift that makes them just feel very weak as soon as they attempt to use it.
Yeah. It's important that you get the right equipment.
And do you, because you do a lot of coaching, but do you compete yourself? Or do you just arch for fun?
I wish I had the time, Anna, to go and compete. I think when I started off my archery journey, my mission was always to make the sport accessible. So I've faced many barriers trying to access the sport from a young age, but I wanted to change that. I wanted anybody who wants to take up the sport for it to be accessible. But when you do coaching, it's all about coaching, and you kind of neglect your own archery.
And when you say hurdles, do you mean hurdles you face were really about it not being expected that you would want to get into archery and it being inaccessible?
For me, it was, I think there was a lot of red tape around archery back at, you know, a long time ago, I would say, otherwise I'll give away my age. But there wasn't many women-only sessions. In fact, I can say that there was none. So for me, it was like I wanted an environment that I felt safe in. And I think we have created that with Crescent Archers, a safe environment for everybody. If they want ladies only, women's only, we do that. And even the mixed sessions, we have couples come in and they enjoy it. They really enjoy it.
Well, thank you so much, Jamila. That has been so interesting. And it's a wonderful thing you've done. And will you be following archery at the Olympics?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It's so inspirational to see what you can achieve. And we did get to meet all the squad. So we're all rooting for them. Crescent Archers is rooting for them. I think the whole country is rooting for them. Good luck to the team.
Yes. Thank you so much for speaking to us, and good luck to you at Crescent Archery, and good luck to that Olympic team. Thank you so much to Jamila B for that. Very inspirational stuff. Everyone must go and sign up to their local archery clubs immediately.
Yes.
I think. And also, here's something to inspire people. I learned while reading up on archery that the Robin Hood is surprisingly common. So the Robin Hood is...
Is it where you...
steal from the rich and give to the poor. No, it's not that. Is it where you fight a fat vicar on a log? No, it's not that.
It's keep going through the myths of Robin Hood until you bump into the thing by accident you think might be relevant. No, I don't think anyone at home's got time for that. The Robin Hood is the move where you impale someone's arrow with your own. So you come up the behind of someone else's arrow and you split it in half. And you always think when you see it in, let's say, a Disney film of Robin Hood, that, my God, that's ridiculously unrealistic, as if anyone does that. But if you go on archery forums, people will say, oh, I've only been doing archery for a few months. I just did a Robin Hood. And people will say, oh, yeah, nice shooting, mate. It's a bit of a pain, isn't it? Because then you have to get a new arrow. And so there you go. It's something that is totally achievable within a shortish amount of time.
And find out whether Anna is actually denigrating my amazing achievement of doing a Robin Hood during our challenge. And that's why she's saying it's really easy. Or whether I'm now lying and actually neither of us got anywhere near the targets. Find out later in the show. Anne Boleyn was an archer.
Yeah, that's what she's most famous for, isn't it?
Yeah. Margaret of Anjou. Some people might know her as the wife of Henry VI, but you probably know her as an archer.
Absolutely, yes. I know about people's archery first and their other achievements second, yes. Well, really, so they both did archery, what, as a sort of hobby in the grounds of their husband's castles?
I believe so. That's according to George Hansard's The Book of Archery, which was written in 1840. But that was written basically after archery was sort of reborn as this upper-class pursuit. Robin Hood had become popular. Ivanhoe had been written, which includes someone winning an archery tournament. And it just suddenly became this thing where if you're a posho in England, you did archery.
I can see that. It doesn't involve sweating your tits off in a way that some sports do. And I think the poshos sometimes don't want to be seen to sweat their tits off. It's quite that noble stance, isn't it? And it shows that you've got a lot of land available to you if you can afford to spend dozens and dozens of meters of it firing arrows. So, yeah.
I think Lady Jane James, when she became Lady Patroness of the Royal Toxophilites, said, at least it doesn't involve sweating your tits off. And when... that group was amazing. They would have archery breakfasts. They would create songs about archery.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a really cool place to be if you were into your archery and didn't have to work for a living.
Yeah, I associate archery quite a lot with kings and queens, mostly because they wanted to encourage ordinary people to do it. And in fact, I kind of blame archery for the bad name of football over the years, because so many kings in our various bits of research end up banning football because they want to encourage people to practice archery, essentially because it makes you very useful in war. But I think Richard II and Henry V both banned football because it stopped people practicing their archery. James I of Scotland, same thing. So it does have this, you know, this is the mainstream government sanctioned posh person's pursuit that must not be allowed to be taken over by these football hooligans. Yeah.
I think in 1960, there was an act called the Betting and Gaming Act. And until then, any sport except archery was banned on Christmas Day. So I don't know if that includes like Monopoly or charades or whatever. But technically...
Okay, I don't think we're calling Monopoly a sport.
No?
I think there has to be some level of physical exertion, which I know sort of chasing your sibling around the house afterwards, waving a pickaxe at them is sort of exercise, but it's not a central part of Monopoly.
I suppose not. But that meant that in 1959, there was a full set of football fixtures on Christmas Day. And so technically every player who played in those games was breaking the law.
Oh, really? So they just ignored the law?
I'm afraid they did. Well, I mean, it is a bit of a dumb law. And it was going back to like the 16th century, the law. It just hadn't been repealed in that time.
Yeah, fair enough. One thing that's quite fascinating about archery that I don't think you know unless you're into it is the archer's paradox. It's the fact that, if you think about it logically, you're holding a bow and arrow and your arrow is up against the wooden bow. So you'd assume when you ping that arrow and thrust it towards the target, as the arrow rubs against that wooden bow, it would be sent off at a weird angle, and it doesn't. And it's this thing called the archer's paradox, and it's all because the bows are actually a little bit flexible. So what they do is they go in a snaking motion which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And actually, on the day, it was really striking because it was like, I think it was your second shot that you'd hit when we were practicing. Both of your first shots were quite good. And the second one, from where I was stood, seemed to have gone in at an angle. And I thought that maybe you'd almost done a Robin Hood and kind of hit the end of your arrow and it kind of deflected. But no, Ollie said to us that it was actually due to this staking motion.
It's the wobble. It's what's meant to happen, guys. It's meant to go in at, you know, a 90 degree angle.
You can tell someone who is an archer after they've died. As in, if you dig up a body and you find that they've got a really buff right shoulder, like as in the bone is a lot thicker than on the left shoulder, that means that they were probably
really
a longbowman.
What a good reason to go around digging up bodies.
Yeah.
If anyone asks, you just wanted to know if they were an archer.
I mean, it is kind of interesting that your bones get buff like the rest of you, because you are pulling, like, not maybe the ones that we pulled, but longbowmen were pulling unbelievable forces backwards, weren't they?
They were. I think it was up to 14 stone of weight you'd be pulling back, like the equivalent of lifting up a 14 stone human being with your right arm.
Well, I spoke to an archer. His name was Tom Hall. And actually, if anyone has been following the Olympics, they will know that he was the top finishing solo British archer in the men's part of the draw. He came ninth, and Megan Havers also came ninth in the women's part of the draw. But unfortunately, I couldn't tell whether one of his arms was extremely buff compared to the other because it was all over Zoom. But he did tell me lots of interesting stuff. So let's listen to that interview right now. Okay, I am joined by archer Tom Hall. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right, thanks. Having my day off at the moment. Just chilling out.
Excited for Paris?
Yeah, definitely. Especially after Tokyo, where it was kind of weird experience of it being like a ghost ship.
Because that was the COVID games, right?
Yeah. One of the things I remember the most about it was when we got on the buses to go from the village to the venues. They would let us all get on the bus, shut the door, put a sticker on the window with a barcode, literally seal us into the bus, and then when we arrived they could scan it and be like, yeah, no one has left this bus.
Holy moly, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a real experience. Yeah,
I think what's especially interesting for you is, like, we speak to some other athletes who almost from the year dot it was obvious what they were going to do. I read in fact yesterday that Phil Foden, the England football player, was scouted when he was 4 years old at a school in Stockport, but you actually came to it relatively late. Is that true?
I was 20 when I started it and I picked it up at uni. Yeah. So I like to say that everyone I'm shooting against started when they were in nappies.
And also, I read on your website, you have a brilliant blog on there, which is very honest. But you say that in 2010, you were bad at sports.
Yeah.
Which can't possibly be true, can it?
No, it's absolutely true. I was enthusiastic, but not skilled at most sports that I did. And I just happened to pick up archery when I'd been looking for something else to do. I'd done a bit of judo before that, where I kept getting thrown through the air as I was kind of sailing along, thinking,
You're thinking maybe I should be sending something else through the air rather than me going through the air.
There could be better options here. Yeah.
Here's a question. When I watch the archery on television, they have all these sticky out bits on the bows. They look like they've been made by some German automobile firm from the 23rd century.
You're not too far off, to be fair.
What are they? What's all these bits?
So there's the two bits you're probably seeing are stabilizers. And that's basically just a long stick with a weight on the end. And the idea of that is you're just looking to increase the moment of inertia of the bow, if we're going to go technical. So it makes it hard to rotate.
So it's like, you know, when someone's walking across Niagara Falls on a tightrope.
Yeah, it's exactly the same idea as one of those kind of balance beams on a tightrope walk. You move weight far away from you. So a little movement at the bow is a bigger movement at the end of the rod. And that gets dampened out more efficiently. When you do it at a pro level, you stack quite a lot of weight on the end of that.
Because yeah,
I think my stabilization is about a kilo of weights, and then the bow itself is another couple of kilos, maybe a kilo
How
and a half.
Interesting. So it's like it's quite different to the cyclist, because the better you get, the more stabilizers you have.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. And some people take it to extremes. There's a balance. You're trying to balance the physical weight of the bow with the draw force required to pull it back, because if those two things are out of whack, then the bendy bits of the bow, they won't close at the same time, because everything is slightly off angle. For a sport that attracts a lot of perfectionists, it's actually really annoyingly not perfect, because you try and pull the bow back straight, but you physically can't because your body is in the way.
And you mentioned quite often in your blog, when I was reading it, you mentioned clickers. I assume it's something that clicks, but other than that, what's a clicker?
Clickers are funny because they're probably the smallest thing on the bow that makes the biggest difference. And probably quite a lot of people would say they can't even shoot without one.
Huh.
It's a little strip of metal. And when you pull the arrow back, here's one I brought earlier.
Oh, you've got an arrow.
Got an arrow for
you.
Oh,
my God.
You get this bendy strip of metal, and as you pull the arrow back underneath it, at some point, it will hit your bow and make a loud noise. And that's your trigger to let go of the string.
I see. So you always have to pull the string back exactly the same amount every single time.
Yeah. But more importantly is the fact that it gives you a trigger to let go of the string, because otherwise you have to decide when to do that. So it stops you kind of overthinking the shot.
Yeah. Because it's such a long distance, the arrow is going in like a parabola, right? So it's going up and then down. You're not just firing it like a darts player is firing a straight dart at a dartboard.
Everything's a parabola, like if you zoom in enough, right? But yes, it goes up quite a long way, maybe 2 or 3 meters, and then comes back down the other side. So you have to compensate for that in where you set your sight. I do another form of archery called field archery, where you have targets at just unknown distances in the woods quite often, and you have to just go, that looks about 40 meters away, shoot at it and hope that you hit it. Sort of thing. So you need to know where to set your sight for any given distance.
I'm surprised that the Olympics hasn't looked at field archery yet, or maybe it has, because they're always trying to make things more like TV friendly and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think field archery's got a lot of potential, but just that we've maybe struggled to find the right format to actually broadcast it out. I think the Olympics quite like archery because you get one spot and we just use it for a week and then it's all sorted. But there's a huge amount of politics and everything that goes into what things are in the Olympics and what things aren't.
I mean, obviously the history of archery goes back to people using bow and arrows to get food and whatever. Obviously you wouldn't do that, but I did see an image on your Instagram of you next to a 3D target.
Yeah. It might have been shaped like a minion.
Yeah.
from the movies. I enjoyed that one. Yeah, that was a little trick shot they put on for us at a competition one time. They stuck that 100 meters up a really steep hill and just said, good luck, you know, off you go. That's longer than we'd usually shoot in field archery or anything really. And I just sort of aimed somewhere above its head, give it a go, managed to hit it. I was pretty proud of that. That might even make my top 10 shots of all time.
Maybe if we put a little minion in the Olympic archery target, then that would help.
Yeah, you know, we could go for that. People have their little lucky charms and things. Sometimes at the club, we just have little stickers, little sort of foam stickers with smiley faces. People like having something to aim at. So they used to shoot at the pins that you used to hold the targets on, and then they keep breaking them. So the stickers were kind of like a, okay, please just shoot at these so you don't break all the target pins instead.
Amazing. Okay, so Anna and I are going to be going to an archery range soon to see which of us is the best archer. Neither of us has ever done any of it before, but I am desperate above anything in the world that I beat her.
That's the right attitude.
Well, I wonder if you can give me any like weird trick that will guarantee that I'll be able to beat her in this competition.
Yeah, I think for a beginner, what I'd say is try and open the bow as much as possible, right? So don't think about pulling the string back to your face, because you can't really pull it more than here.
Okay.
If your arms are already fully extended out, then you're going to hit kind of the same draw length every time. You can get more power out of the bow.
We're going to be going to like a range that does allow beginners to go there. Is there any chance that either of us is going to hit the target at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, archery, we get a lot of beginners coming through the door quite often, and most clubs are very used to running beginner sessions. So they'll just put the target really close to you and really big. so they'll actually probably be the same targets that we use for outdoor competitions, but you'll just be shooting it at about 5 or 10 meters instead of 70. So it'll just be there in front of you.
Okay. So it's basically the same.
Basically the same, just, you know, about 20 times easier. Yeah. And it that doesn't scale linearly either. It gets like exponentially harder the further away it goes. Yeah.
Is that right? So like going from 50 meters to 70 meters is much more difficult than 30 to 50, for instance.
Yeah. What things like wind drift, the effect that has, kind of scales quadratically. As you double the distance, it's about four times more effect on the arrow. But you won't be worrying about wind drift.
I should hope not. And then my final question to you, and I'm really sorry to put you on the spot, and we should have asked you this before. Do you have any facts you can tell us about archery? Or it could be something that people can look out for when they're watching the archery in the Olympics that they wouldn't otherwise know about.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones, you wouldn't necessarily pick it up just by watching it, but when people go to the Olympics, everyone submits their height and weight and date of birth and everything, and there's all this data is actually like available and you can look at that. And I think archery has one of the smallest gaps in average height between men and women in the sport.
Oh, really?
Being taller lets you draw the bow back further. It's an advantage. So you generally, the women are taller than average, but the men are kind of held back at about the same sort of 6 foot or so average height, because you reach a certain point where you get too tall and no one makes bows that are suitable to it, or even actually the arrows, they struggle to make arrows that are strong enough to hold up to the forces of someone with like a basketball player's wingspan. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, well, that's it. Thanks for your tips, Tom. I will definitely do my best to beat Anna
just
in the archery.
Empty head as well.
Empty head. Well, that's never a problem for me, so we'll be all good. And best of luck in Paris, and we'll all be watching and cheering you on.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much to Tom, and congratulations to him for finishing in the top 10 in the Olympics this year. And really interesting to hear him talk about the idea that you have to get into the right mindset when you're doing archery, because that actually is something that we came across when we were writing our book, A Load of Old Balls, wasn't it, Anna?
Yeah, I think obviously psychology is important in every sport to an extent, but it seems so prevalent in archery, the mindset you have. And actually, just quickly, I mentioned Matt Stutzman earlier, who is a person who was born without arms, who's a great archer with his legs. And he says that to train, he jumps out of planes. So every time he practices archery, he does a quick parachute jump before training.
What?
Yeah, I know, weird.
Is he imagining what it's like to be an arrow, do you think, flying through the air?
Exactly. You must be at one with your tools. He is not. I think he's trying to fire up the adrenaline in his mind, because he says the most important thing in archery is being able to control your adrenaline and being able to let calmness overcome it. So he thinks practicing by throwing himself out of planes constantly is the way to do it. But it is about getting in the zone, isn't it? And in fact, it's because of archery that we in the West have the concept of Zen, even.
Yeah, it is. I read a whole load of books when we were writing our book, as I'm sure you did. But one of them that I bought was called Zen and the Art of Archery, which is a really, really famous book, which is probably the thing which, like you say, brought Zen to the West, or certainly popularized it. It was by a guy called Eugene Herigel, and he had decided to visit Japan to learn how to do archery, and that he would try and get Zen enlightenment by doing so. And actually, his book became so popular that there was a study in Germany in the 1980s and found that 85% of people who were doing archery were doing it to get some kind of spiritual training from it, just because they'd read his book and they decided the only way to get Zen is to be an archer.
Yeah, that was certainly the idea. And he trained with this guy called Awa Kenzo, who was an absolute legend in the Japanese form of archery, which I think was called Kyudo. And Kenzo had this amazing attitude where it was much more spiritual than physical. And he actually once did this thing where he stood about to fire an arrow and he pulled it back. And then he decided to just stand there with the bow fully pulled taut forever and ever. He was like, I'm going to stand here and sort of prove to myself that I can do this mind over matter. And he stood there apparently for days on end until he collapsed. And he sort of said, I thought I died. And as he collapsed, he released the arrow. And according to his teaching, it hit the target more perfectly than ever before. And as a result, the philosophy came about that you've got to lose yourself completely. It's all about that getting into your flow, and your mind and your body become one, and all conscious thought disappears. You're driven only by your unconscious. And that's when you'll be able to fire the perfect shot.
Whereas in actual fact, we were told that the longer you hold it in that position, the more weak you get, the more your body starts to wobble, and the much more likely you are to completely miss the target.
That's a good point. I've forgotten that. What a load of rubbish this Awa Kenzo guy's talking.
He was so maverick.
He was.
He came up with the idea that the best way of training is not to do any training. But of course, that infuriated all the other archery trainers who were suddenly out of a job. And so all the other archery teachers would throw rocks at him in the streets.
Harsh.
Well, harsh, but, you know, it's their livelihood.
Yeah, I guess so. If you're an archery trainer, fire a bloody arrow at the guy. Come on. It can be a foam one. It doesn't need to be a deadly arrow.
So anyway, Herigl comes to Japan and he's heard about this guy and he decides that he wants him to be his teacher. But the thing is that he didn't speak Japanese and Awa didn't speak German. And so they had to have this translator who was called Sozo Komachiya. But Sozo Komachiya was extremely polite. And so whenever Master Awa said anything ridiculous, the translator would just translate it into something much more normal. And whenever Master Awa would contradict himself, which he did on multiple occasions, because he was just saying the first thing that came into his head, Herigl would say, oh, what did he say then? And he'd go, oh no, that bit wasn't important. He was just talking about what a nice day it is or something. And Herigl then wrote his incredibly popular book based on what he was told that Master Awa was saying. But in actual fact, he wasn't saying any of that stuff. It was all through the interpreter. What he was saying was a load of old nonsense.
I can't believe you're claiming this. There'll be a few people listening, who maybe are Japanese or embedded in archery history, who know that Awa Kenzo is this great Zen archery master, hugely respected, wisdom passed down the ages, and we're just accusing him of talking a load of old balls.
Speaking of a load of old balls, it is available in all good bookshops.
Oh, what a lovely segue. Well done. It is. I think there will genuinely be people listening who are just really fired up on one side or the other of this debate, because it's quite a heated debate as to how much we should take the Zen philosophies in Herigl's book as nuggets of great wisdom passed down from Japanese spirituality, how much he was sort of making it up himself, how much Kenzo was being mistranslated. And all I know is that Eugene Herigl became a fully signed up member of the Nazi party. No, I think that is really interesting because he was so into Zen. But then he was quite into Nazism as well, which don't seem like two similar concepts.
They do not seem like bedfellows.
No, no. But yeah, a controversial topic.
Controversial indeed. But was our competition controversial? That's the question. You and I spent a morning at Archery Fit in Greenwich. And at the end of the day, we decided to find out which of us was the best at archery. So let's listen to that now.
The competition finish. Time.
Yeah, finish on off. We're going to have a proper competition round. So, right. As you guys may have already guessed, we do scoring rounds. Basically, every single arrow is worth 0 to 10 points. Every single ring that you see up there is worth 1 point, all the way up to 10, as we already discussed. If you have an arrow that goes right between two circles, it counts as a high value circle. Last of all, the centermost circle, the bullseye, is still worth 10 points, but it is there to break ties. And in case you guys have a tie score, whoever has the most bullseyes breaks it in their favor. Any questions?
Nope, no questions.
Good
we
luck,
need to break a tie score. This is how we get more listeners, that kind of tension.
Anna, how on earth are we both going to get in the bullseye? Considering what we've seen for the last hour.
Safe to shoot.
There's a lot to remember.
There really
let's
is.
See what we can do. Okay, look at the wall. Relax your shoulders, James. Turn your head. Lift your chin.
Listen to what James is saying.
Take your arm.
Do the same things.
Raise your arm. Push as far as you can. Elbow up. Pull it all the way back to my mouth.
Excellent.
Move my shoulders back and release.
Nice.
Well done.
Nice.
That's
he's got
clean.
Clean in the middle. Clean in the middle.
Clean Holy tiny. Moly, that went right in the middle.
That's a 10 squared.
Well done.
That's unbelievable stuff.
Keep shooting. Both wow. of you okay. to shoot.
Okay.
That was outrageous.
What's the point now? Come relax, there's no point. We're just doing it for fun now, not to win.
Well, the number of times I've missed this target. You've still got plenty of chance.
Okay, so we've got one left each.
One left each. I think it might very well be 20-21.
So 21 to Anna, 20 to me, despite me getting a 10.
Mm. No point. No point
depends
getting the ball.
Depends entirely on line breaks right now. We're going to have a look.
Okay.
Good luck.
Oh, they were both done. Weak.
Oh, dear
Lord. Very close.
Dear Lord.
Both of you, bows down.
Disaster.
Bows down, safe to collect. That has got to be the cheekiest line break I've seen in a while. Bloody hell. So you can see that
despite the fact that it is barely in. Yeah, that is, technically speaking, cutting it.
And so where my arrow's gone in, you can see there's a slight little cut that goes into the other angle, yeah, into
so the
other
colour. The key thing there is less the fact that the paper itself is cut and rather the fact that the arrow is just over.
I see,
that,
so the arrow's...
Okay.
So, yeah, that
arguably.
Is...
The arrow is over the line, apparently. Yeah. Oh, dear.
So 12, 20, 24, 13, 18. We are on a 24 as well.
No, we've done it.
Which means
we've done
that
it for the narrative.
We have gone for a tiebreaker through that bullseye. I don't know how the hell you two did it, but okay, well done, both of you. Absolutely fantastic.
James
breaking the tie in his favour with that bullseye. Well done.
Wow.
Well done.
That really wasn't set up, people listening. We're not faking it.
The entire rest of the season was faked, but this was real.
Yeah, I've never been in a boat in my life. That is really funny. How hilarious.
Well done, both of you.
James, you said when introducing that bit that we were there to find out who was the best at archery, and I don't think anything like that was discovered. There are always anomalies. Let's not forget that Leighton Hewitt won a couple of Grand Slams. Okay, so it's not necessarily about who's the best at archery, but in that one instance, you did beat me. Not something we need to go on about, but takes the score, I think, in this series to 2-2.
Yeah, what an unnecessary slam on Leighton Hewitt that was.
Look, I'm a big fan of Leighton Hewitt, but when you look at the great tennis players who came subsequently, I think he'd be the first to admit he lucked out.
And yet I am the last to admit that I lucked out. I absolutely smashed it, even though it came to a very dubious line call and a tiebreaker on getting the bullseye at the end. I feel like it was a complete fair result.
I do want to emphasize, we didn't even set up that incredible tension and plot twist at the end of it being a tie. That just happened in real time. The adrenaline rush there. Who needs a parachute jump? It was huge. Anyway, hope you all enjoyed that. And we'll be back again next week to compete in what, James?
Well, next week we are going full on physical. We're going to do something that I'm not actually sure I will be able to do at all, let alone challenge you on. We are going to Harrowall and we're going to do a little bit of Olympic climbing.
Yes, we are. We will also be talking to people who actually know how to climb and have interesting things to say about it. So do join us again next week.
In the meantime, I've been James Harkin.
I've been Anna Tyszynski.
And you've been listening to Quite a Good Sport. Quite a Good Sport was presented by James Harkin and Anna Tyszynski, with contributions from Jamila B, Oliver Yap and Tom Hall. It was produced by Molly Windust and James Harkin. The production team included Alex Bell, Adrian Bradley, Tara Durrell, Ethan Ruparelia, Liang Lee and Natasha McQueen. Thanks go to Archery Fit, Crescent Archery, Archery GB and Team GB. This has been a quite interesting podcast.